Thank you, Professor Carolla. It's indeed a pleasure to be with you this evening and address you from maybe the most prestigious forum in the United States today. George, how are you? Good. 21 years ago, this last September, on a lonely stretch of railroad track paralleling U.S. Highway 101 near Salinas, 32 Bracero farm workers lost their lives in a tragic accident. The Braceros had been imported from Mexico to work on California farms. They died when their bus, which was converted from a flatbed truck, drove in front of a freight train. The conversion of the bus had not been approved by any government agency. The driver had tunnel vision. Most of the bodies laid unidentified for days. No one, including the grower who employed the workers, even knew their names. Today, thousands of farm workers live under savage conditions, beneath trees and amid garbage and human excrement near tomato fields in San Diego County, tomato fields which use the most modern technology. Vicious rats gnaw on them as they sleep. They walk miles to buy food at inflated prices, and they carry water in from irrigation ditches. Child labor is still common in many farm areas. As much as 30% of Northern California's garlic harvesters are underage children. Kids as young as 6 years old have voted in state-conducted union elections to be qualified as workers. Some 800,000 children work with their families harvesting crops across America. Babies born to migrant workers suffer 25% higher infant mortality than the rest of the population. Malnutrition among farm worker children is 10 times higher than the national rate. Farm workers' average life expectancy is still 49 years, compared to 73 years for the average American. All my life, I have been driven by one dream, one goal, one vision: to overthrow a farm labor system in this nation that treats farm workers as if they were not important human beings. Farm workers are not agricultural implements. They are not beasts of burden to be used and discarded. That dream was born in my youth. It was nurtured in my early days of organizing. It has flourished, and it has been attacked. I'm not very different from anyone else who ever tried to accomplish something with his life. My motivation comes from my personal life, from watching what my mother and father went through when I was growing up, from what we experienced as migrant farm workers in California. That dream, that vision, grew from my own experience with racism, with hope, with a desire to be treated fairly, and to see my people treated as human beings and not as chattel. It grew from anger and rage, emotions I felt 40 years ago when people of my color were denied the right to see a movie or eat at a restaurant in many parts of California. It grew from the frustration and humiliation I felt as a boy who couldn't understand how the growers could abuse and exploit farm workers when there were so many of us and so few of them. Later in the 50s, I experienced a different kind of exploitation in San Jose, in Los Angeles, and in other urban communities. We, the Mexican-American people, were dominated by a majority that was Anglo. I began to realize what other minority people had discovered, that the only answer, the only hope, was in organizing. More of us had to become citizens. We had to register to vote. And people like me had to develop the skills it would take to organize, to educate, and to help empower the Chicano people. I spent many years before we founded the union learning how to work with people. We experienced some successes in voter registration, in politics, in battling racial discrimination. Successes in an era when Black Americans were just beginning to assert their civil rights and when political awareness among Hispanics was almost non-existent. But deep in my heart, I knew I could never be happy unless I tried organizing the farm workers. I didn't know if I would succeed, but I had to try. Those who attack our union often say it's not really a union, it's something else, a social movement, a civil rights movement, it's something dangerous. They're half right. The United Farm Workers is first and foremost a union, and like any union, we have to either produce for our members on the bread and butter issues, or we won't survive. But the UFW has always been something more than a union, although it's never been dangerous if you believe in the Bill of Rights. The UFW was the beginning. We attacked that historical source of shame and infamy that our people in this country lived with. We attacked that injustice, not by complaining, not by seeking handouts, not by becoming soldiers in the war on poverty. We organized. Farm workers acknowledged we had allowed ourselves to become victims in a democratic society, a society where majority rule and collective bargaining are supposed to be more than academic theories or political rhetoric. And by addressing this historical problem, we created confidence and pride and hope in an entire people's ability to create the future. The UFW survival, its existence, were not in doubt in my mind when the time began to come. After the union became visible, when Chicanos started entering college in greater numbers, when Hispanics began running for public office in greater numbers, when our people started asserting their rights on a broad range of issues and in many communities across the country. The union survival, its very existence, sent out a signal to all Hispanics that we were fighting for our dignity, that we were challenging and overcoming injustice, that we were empowering the least educated among us, the poorest among us. The message was clear. If it could happen in the fields, it could happen anywhere, in the cities, in the courts, in the city councils, in the state legislatures. I didn't really appreciate it at the time, but the coming of our union signaled the start of great changes among Hispanics that are now only beginning to be seen. I've traveled to every part of this nation, and I have met and spoken with thousands of Hispanics from every walk of life, from every social and economic class. One thing I hear most often from Hispanics, regardless of age or position, and from many non-Hispanics as well, is that the farm workers gave them the hope that they could succeed and the inspiration to work for change. From time to time, you will hear our opponents declare that the union is weak, that the union has no support, that the union has not grown fast enough. Our obituary has been written many times. How ironic it is that the same forces that argue so passionately that the union is not influential are the same forces that continue to fight us so hard. The union's power in agriculture has nothing to do with the number of farm workers under union contract. It has nothing to do with the farm workers' ability to contribute to democratic politicians. It doesn't even have much to do with our ability to conduct successful boycotts. The very fact of our existence forces agribusiness, unionized and not unionized, to spend millions of dollars every year on increased wages, on improved working conditions, on benefits for workers. If we are as weak and unsuccessful, why do the growers continue to fight us with such passion? Because as long as we continue to exist, farm workers will benefit from our existence, even if they don't work under union contract. It doesn't really matter whether we have 100,000 members or 500,000 members. In truth, hundreds of thousands of farm workers in California and in other states are better off today because of our work. And Hispanics across California and the nation who don't work in agriculture are better off today because of what the farm workers taught people about organization, about pride and strength, about seizing control over their own lives. And tens of thousands of the children and grandchildren of farm workers and the children and grandchildren of Hispanics are moving out of the fields and out of the barrios and into the professions and into business and into politics, and that movement cannot be reversed. Our union will forever exist as an empowering force among Chicanos in the Southwest. That means that our power and our influence will grow and not diminish. Two major trends give us hope and encouragement. First, our union has returned to a tried and tested weapon in the farm workers' nonviolent arsenal, the boycott. After the Agricultural Labor Relations Act became law in California in 1975, we dismantled our boycott to work with the law. During the early and mid-70s, millions of Americans supported our boycotts. After 1975, we redirected our efforts from the boycott to organizing and winning elections under the law. The law helped farm workers make progress in overcoming poverty and injustice. At companies where farm workers are protected by union contracts, we have made progress in overcoming child labor, in overcoming miserable wages and working conditions, in overcoming sexual harassment of women workers, in overcoming discrimination in employment, in overcoming dangerous pesticides which poison our people and poison the food we all eat. What we have organized, these injustices soon pass into history. But under Republican Governor George Dugmajian, the law that guarantees a right to organize no longer protects farm workers. It doesn't work anymore. In 1982, corporate growers gave Dugmajian $1 million to run for governor of California. Since he took office, Dugmajian has paid back his debt to the growers with the blood and sweat of California farm workers. Instead of enforcing the law as it was written against those who break the law, Dugmajian invites growers who break the law to seek relief from the governor's appointees. What does all this mean for farm workers? It means that the right to vote in free elections is a sham. It means that the right to talk freely about the union among your fellow workers on the job is a cruel hoax. It means that the right to be free from threats and intimidation by growers is an empty promise. It means that the right to sit down and negotiate with your employer as equals across the bargaining table and not as peons in the fields is a fraud. It means that thousands of farm workers who are owed millions of dollars in back pay because their employers broke the law are still waiting for their checks. It means that 36,000 farm workers who voted to be represented by the United Farm Workers in free elections are still waiting for contracts from growers who refuse to bargain in good faith. It means that for farm workers, child labor will continue. It means that infant mortality will continue. It means malnutrition among our children will continue. It means that short life expectancy and the human living and working conditions will continue. Are these make-believe threats? Are they exaggerations? Ask the farm workers who are waiting for the money they lost because growers broke the law. Ask farm workers who are still waiting for growers to bargain in good faith and sign contracts. Ask the farm workers who have been fired from their jobs because they spoke out for the union. Ask the farm workers who have been threatened with physical violence because they supported the UFW. And ask the family of René López, the young farm worker from Fresno who was shot to death 2 years ago because he supported the union. Ask the farm workers who watch as their children go hungry in this land of wealth and promise. Ask the farm workers who see their lives eaten away by poverty and suffering. The Dugmajian has stopped issuing complaints against the growers who break the law. In 1981 and 82, 137 complaints were issued. In 1984-85, only 24 complaints are expected to be announced. Dugmajian has caused a huge increase in the backlog of farm worker charges against growers which go uninvestigated. In 1981-82, there were 392 uninvestigated charges filed by farm workers. By last September, the backlog had surpassed 1,000. Dugmajian has reacted to the attention focused on this failure to investigate farm worker charges. He has reacted to the backlog of uninvestigated charges that he has caused. During the last 6 months of 1984, Dugmajian's prosecutors arbitrarily dismissed a massive number of farm worker charges without investigating them, and in violation of the internal procedures for dealing with cases that Dugmajian's men established. More than 403 charges were dismissed. This dismissal of charges was timed so that Dugmajian could deliver a speech to the Nisi Farmers League in Fresno on February 8th, claiming, quote, "This year, we've nearly eliminated the backlog we inherited, and Mr. Chavez doesn't like that either. Now he complains we're moving too fast," unquote. Every day, farm workers are fired and coerced and abused by corporate growers, many of whom have financed Dugmajian's political campaigns. The farm workers filed charges under the law of the state of California. George Dugmajian, as governor, is responsible for enforcing that law. But instead of enforcing the law, Dugmajian manipulates the statistics. Instead of investigating the charges farm workers have filed, Dugmajian has fashioned those charges into a dagger which he has thrust into the backs of farm workers of California. Dugmajian has conducted a systematic purge of the best staff of the Agricultural Labor Relations Board, which enforces the law. He cut the agency's budget by 27%. One-third of the ALRB's investigators were eliminated. One-third of the prosecutors were cut, along with 40% of the hearing judges and one-third of the appeals attorneys. Dugmajian has harassed and hounded out of the agency the most competent staff. Everyone who doesn't share his pro-grower ideology has gone. Mostly newly hired investigators and prosecutors don't speak Spanish and have no labor law experience. Dugmajian has closed off the compliance process, the process of getting farm workers the money they are owed because growers broke the law. Dugmajian's men refuse to process claims so workers can get their checks after growers have exhausted their appeals in the courts. California growers owe their farm workers some $72 million in back pay as a result of convictions and court rulings. But not a single farm worker has received a dime because Dugmajian has blocked the compliance procedure. Many of the growers who owe farm workers millions of dollars are also major political contributors to Dugmajian. Last year, the state legislature voted $1 million for compliance work. Dugmajian vetoed that appropriation. Dugmajian's agents have settled farm worker cases against growers without consulting the workers and for as little as 10 cents on the dollar. For example, Abadi Farms owes its workers $10 million in back pay. Dugmajan's men settled a case for $1,700,000. That settlement was rejected by the Agricultural Labor Relations Board as too low. So what did Dugmajan representative do? He settled, came in and settled the case for $900,000. For years, it has been NLRB precedent that back pay owed workers by employers is the same as wages earned and must be paid in full. Dugmajan has caused farm workers' cases to be arbitrarily dismissed. In 1981-82, 46% of the cases were dismissed. In 1984-85, Dugmajan is expected to dismiss upwards of 67% of the cases brought by farm workers. The most outrageous incident of abuse occurred last fall when Governor Dugmajan's prosecutors allowed lawyers for a major lettuce grower unrestricted access to 15 boxes of confidential files. Those files contained the names of farm workers and bore witness against the company returned for the promise of anonymity. The files shown to grower attorneys feature internal staff memos, attorney-client communications, and other confidential documents. They also include the names of hundreds of farm worker witnesses. Many of them were promised confidentiality by prosecutors in return for information on grower lawlessness. State investigators and prosecutors often agree to keep growers from learning the identity of farm worker witnesses because many workers will not otherwise cooperate for fear of reprisals from their employers. Now it is well known among farm workers throughout California that Governor Dugmajan's men will turn your name and what you said over to the boss if you talk to the state about grower abuses. Dugmajan's prosecutors agree to show the privileged files to grower lawyers even though their client's conviction for breaking the law is being appealed in the appellate court. What Dugmajan's prosecutors did is the same as the district attorney giving convicted criminals privileged information about their cases, which are on appeal. It's outrageous, it's unheard of in national labor relations practice. These tragic events force farm workers to declare a new international boycott of California table grapes only, not wines and not raisin grapes, except those grapes produced under UFW contract. That's why we are asking Americans once again to join the farm workers by boycotting California table grapes. The Lewis Harris poll revealed that 17 million American adults boycotted grapes. We are convinced that those people and that goodwill has not disappeared. That segment of the population which makes our boycotts work are the Hispanics, the blacks, the other minorities, and our allies in labor and in religion. But it is also an entire generation of young Americans who matured politically and socially in the 60s and 70s. Millions of people for whom boycotting grapes and other products became a socially accepted pattern of behavior. If you were young, Anglo, and or near campus during the late 60s and early 70s, chances are you boycotted supported farm workers in their boycotts. 15 years later, the men and women of that generation are alive and well. They are in their mid-30s. They are pursuing professional careers. Their disposable income is relatively high. But they are still inclined to respond to an appeal from farm workers. The UFW's mission still has meaning for them. And it has meaning for a new crop of young people who are still concerned about racism, about social justice, who still will respond to poor people who are battling nonviolently against great odds and wealthy special interests. Only today, we must translate the importance of a union for farm workers into the language of the 1980s. Instead of talking about the right to organize, we must talk about protection against sexual harassment in the fields. We must speak about the right to quality food and food that is safe to eat. I can tell you that the new language is working. The 17 million are still there. They are responding not to picket lines and leafleting alone, but to the high-tech boycott of today, a boycott that uses computers and direct mail and advertising techniques which have revolutionized business and politics in recent years. We achieved more success with the boycott in 1984 than we achieved in the 14 years since 1970. Other trends which give us hope is the monumental growth of Hispanic influence in this country, particularly in the Southwest, and what that means in increased population, increased social and economic clout, and increased political influence. For example, south of the Sacramento River in California, Hispanics now make up more than 25% of the population. That figure will top 30% by the year 2000. There are 1.1 million Spanish surnamed registered voters in California. 85% are Democrats, only 13% are Republican. In 1975, there were 200 Hispanic elected officials at all levels of government. In 1984, there were over 400 elected judges, city council members, mayors, and lawmakers. In light of these trends, it is absurd to believe or suggest that we're going back in time as a union or as a people. The growers often try to blame the union for their problems, to lay their sins off on us, sins for which they only have themselves to blame. The growers only have themselves to blame as they begin to reap the harvest of decades of environmental damage they have brought upon the land. The pesticides, the herbicides, the soil fumigants, the fertilizers, the salt deposits from thoughtless irrigation, the ravages of years of unrestrained poisoning of our soil and water. Thousands of acres of land in California have already been damaged by this abuse of nature. Thousands more will be lost unless growers understand that dumping more and more poisons on the soil won't solve their problem on the short term or the long term. Health authorities in many San Joaquin Valley towns already warn young children and pregnant mothers not to drink the water because of nitrates from fertilizers, which has poisoned the groundwater. The growers only have themselves to blame for an increasing demand by consumers for higher quality food, food that isn't tainted by toxics, food that doesn't result from plant mutations or chemicals that produce red, luscious-looking tomatoes that tastes like alfalfa. The growers are making the same mistake American automakers made in the 60s and 70s when they refused to produce small economical cars and open up the door to increase foreign competition. Growers only have themselves to blame for increasing attacks on their publicly financed handouts and government welfare. Water subsidies, mechanization research, huge subsidies for not growing crops. These special privileges came into being before the Supreme Court's one-person, one-vote decision at a time when rural lawmakers dominated the legislature and the Congress. Soon, those handouts could be in jeopardy. As government searches for more revenue and as urban taxpayers take a closer look at farm programs and who they really benefit, the growers only have themselves to blame for the humiliation they have brought upon succeeding waves of immigrant groups that have sweated and sacrificed for over 100 years to make that industry rich. For generations, they have subjugated entire races of dark-skinned farm workers. These are the sins of the growers, not the farm workers. We didn't poison the land. We didn't open the door to imported produce. We didn't covet billions of dollars in government handouts. We didn't abuse and exploit the people who work the land. Today, the growers are like a punch-drunk old boxer who doesn't know he's past his prime. The times are changing. The political and social environment has changed. The chickens are coming home to roost, and the time to account for past sins is fast approaching. I am told these days that farm workers should be discouraged and pessimistic. The Republicans control the governor's office in California and the White House. There is a conservative trend in the land. Yet we are filled with hope and encouragement. We have looked into the future, and the future is ours. History and inevitability are on our side. The farm workers and their children, and the Hispanics and their children, are the future in California, and not corporate growers. They are the past. Those politicians who ally themselves with the corporate growers and against farm workers and Hispanics are in for a big surprise. They want to make their careers in politics. They want to hold power for 20 and 30 years from now. But 20 and 30 years from now, in Modesto, in Salinas, in Fresno, in Bakersfield, in the Imperial Valley, and in many great cities of California, those communities will be dominated by farm workers and not by growers, by the children and grandchildren of farm workers and not by the children and grandchildren of growers. These trends are part of the forces of history which cannot be stopped. No person and no organization can resist them for very long. They are inevitable. Once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. You cannot uneducate the person who has learned to read. You cannot humiliate the person who feels pride. You cannot oppress the people who are not afraid anymore. Our opponents must understand that it's not just a union we have built. Unions, like other institutions, can come and go. But we're more than an institution. For nearly 20 years, our union has been on the cutting edge of a people's cause. And you cannot do away with an entire people. You cannot stamp out a people's cause. Regardless of what the future holds for the union, regardless of what the future holds for farm workers, our accomplishments cannot be undone. La causa, our cause, doesn't have to be experienced twice. The consciousness and pride that were raised by our union are alive and thriving inside millions of young Hispanics who will never work on a farm. Like the other immigrant groups, the day will come when we win the economic and political rewards which are in keeping with our numbers in society. The day will come when the politicians will do the right things by our people out of political necessity and not out of charity or idealism. That day may not come this year, and that day may not come during this decade, but it will come someday. And when that day comes, we shall see the fulfillment of the passage from the book of Matthew in the New Testament, that the last shall be first and the first shall be last. And on that day, our nation shall fulfill its creed, and that fulfillment shall enrich all of us. Thank you.